comic books, movies, TV, and more. Nerds are everywhere. It's time to assemble! It's Nerds United, a Jittery Monkey podcast. Here's your host, Greg Mahochko.
Hello, everyone, and welcome again to Nerds United, episode 40 of my show, Nerds United, on the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. And who am I? I'm Greg Mahochko, and I thank you so much for tuning in. Very awesome show to share with you this time around, because it did not take a whole lot of effort on my part. A little wiring here and there and permission from the individual whom you're going to hear from momentarily, and that was pretty much it. Retcon, backstory, the 10th annual Cape Comic-Con, Cape Girardeau, Missouri, of course, this past weekend, and John Wesley Shipp, the featured of the featured, and he had a panel Saturday afternoon, which I was fortunate enough to be able to figure out the sound system and rig up my laptop and get that bad boy recorded. So glad that I did. It was an amazing, phenomenal panel with the man who initially played Flash 25 years ago on television and now is the father of Flash. He plays Henry Allen on the CW's The Flash, the father of Grant Gustin. Well, character-wise. Grant, of course, plays Barry Allen, and as I mentioned, John plays Henry Allen. So John Wesley Shipp, I'm so fortunate that I had a chance to meet him, and he really worked the crowd, and I set things up with the microphone on the table. Didn't have a stand, but, you know, figured that the panelist would use the microphone, and oh no, John was up. He was walking in front of the crowd, and a pretty good crowd. Of all the panels that they had this past weekend at the Cape Comic-Con, John Wesley Shipp's, sort of not surprisingly, but it was the largest turnout, and I was fortunate enough to be able to not just record it, but then again, you know, wanted to make sure that it was kosher with him, that I was able to share that recording with you, and he didn't have a problem. Now, this is something that's pretty interesting because Bleeding Cool and a couple of other sites picked up on some video that was released from the panel, and it's possible that Mr. John Wesley Shipp leaked some information about the new Flash Arrow spinoff show. Did you see those videos? We've got all of the answers in this episode, so make sure that you listen to it all. Listen to it thoroughly, because you're not going to want to miss what John had to say about some things that are in the works. Praised, highly praised the cast, the group of individuals working on The Flash. Had really good things to say about Greg Berlanti, the executive producer, and just so impressed with. You know, of course, he's a veteran of Hollywood and didn't have any concerns that he wouldn't be able to, you know, handle himself. But the way he carried himself, how gracious he was with the fans, you know, took the first question was asked by a child in the audience. And I think it was pretty cool that it was more story related. It wasn't behind the scenes, but it was, you know, something about, you know, how did you get out of the prison cell, or, you know, things like that, or what's life like in prison, and just, you know, nothing to faze John. Just a tremendous individual. Fortunate that I was able to visit with him briefly, touching on a couple things, and even dropped as you'll hear in the panel, the theme that they discuss in talking about The Flash, the TV show, is how, unlike Arrow and unlike Gotham and things like that, it's more optimistic. So when I stopped by his booth afterwards, I said, you know, Blackest Night, which as you, the listener, know, was the story arc that brought me back into comics. I said Blackest Night to defeat these Black Lanterns. It was sort of almost a Captain Planet type of thing, you know, with our powers combined, and that meant other characters from the DC Universe were given power rings to wield. Lex Luthor was given the Orange Ring of Avarice, and Wonder Woman was given the Star Sapphire Ring, and the Atom was given the Compassion Ring, and the Flash was given the Blue Ring of Hope. So I explained that to him. He said he hadn't read Blackest Lantern. I highly advise that he should. And then on Sunday, got a picture with him and an autograph. So the picture is he and Grant Gustin. So, Grant, I'm coming for you, man. That's on the list now of things to accomplish, is to get the other half of that picture autographed. And someday, who knows, that might hang in the Nerds United store. So that definitely a cherished piece of memorabilia for me, that he was able to autograph that to Nerds United. So without any further ado, I take that back. Rewind just a little bit. Before we get to the panel discussion, which will run in its entirety, and then I'm done. Then you won't hear any more from me. But I wanted to take a minute to remind you, the listener, that I appreciate the support you've shown over the years now. We're coming up on 2 years in just a couple of months, and I've given you some giveaways in the past, and I'm doing this all pretty well out of pocket. So if you shop Amazon.com like I shop Amazon.com, I would request that you head over to jitterymonkey.com/nerdsunitedpodcast and use the Amazon button there, and help out the show if you can. And there's no added charge to you. I mean, the prices don't go up, anything like that, when you use that button. But consider doing that when you do your Amazon shopping. Again, it's jitterymonkey.com/nerdsunitedpodcast. Go down to the bottom and find that Amazon link, and help keep this dream alive, guys. That's really all I got to say about that. So anyway, with now fully prepared, fully ready, without any further ado, here he is, the OG Flash from 1990, and Henry Allen on the CW's The Flash series, Mr. John Wesley Shipp.
John Wesley Shipp with us this week.
Thanks, Kyle. Great to be here.
What an honor. We started talking a few months back, and he was gracious enough to say that his convention season has started, and that he had time on his schedule, so here he is. If a lot of you guys are like me, you may remember John back, and I don't want to talk about his career as if I know every aspect of it, but I know that my mothers and my sister certainly enjoyed the early 80s when he had on television soaps. And I'm sure he has an illustrious career in television that we all know of, and film. But I'm going to ask John just to enjoy this 45 minutes with you all. He's going to obviously take questions. Everyone wants to discuss the iconicism of the CBS series in 1990-1991, which he starred as Barry Allen in The Flash. Have your questions ready. And, of course, the success of the new series.
Thank you.
The success of the new series just speaks for itself, and we've all been just enjoying that and John's performance in that. We had a brief moment to discuss that last night on the way to the hotel, and again, his graciousness on that series and as he relates it to the fans is so special to all of us. John, this is the 45 minutes for you and these folks that wanted to do this with you. So,
great.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. All right. It's good to be here.
You can open it up with questions or do whatever you like.
All right. Okay.
Very good.
Good. Good deal. All right. Hi, guys.
What's going on?
Hi. Who has questions? Do you have a question? Yes, sir.
What was it like when you were in the cell?
put him in the prison cell? Yeah, it's kind of a bummer. I kind of want to stay out of that situation. Yeah, but you know, I got hopes that my son's going to help get me out one of these days. So.
It feel like been passing on the torch to kind of have been there, and then you started like a whole new generation of Flash fans.
Yeah, it really is unusual. I was just when Mark Hamill came back to the prize situation. Mark and I were running back from the set together, and you know he'd just come from the set of Star Wars, so he was saying, you know, rarely do you get the opportunity, 25 years later, to come back, you know, and revisit a project. Of course, we both realize that our job is to hand it off to the new generation. And I can't think of a finer young man or a better actor than Grant Gustin. Not only because we're both from Norfolk, Virginia. We were both born in January. And he was born the year I was doing The Flash. But because he's just an outstanding guy. You know, when we were doing the season finale, which is going to blow your minds wide open, the last 10 minutes of our season finale this year, and I can say this because I'm unconscious on the floor. It has nothing to do with me. But it are some of the most mind-blowing moments. The thing that these producers, I promise I'll work my way back to your question. The thing that these producers are doing right is they realize that we've got to have the adventure, we got to have, you know, the fireworks, we got to have the fun, and we got to have the heart. So they got those three words written up in the writer's room, and they try to balance it. And they balanced it so well with the father-son. And I think, you know, when they first said that they were going to be doing a new Flash, I thought, well, they might want to go one of two ways. They might want to break with the old and have something completely new. I would have been fine with that. Then when I heard what Geoff Johns, how he blew up the Allen family, I mean, Emmett Walsh, who played my father, was not wrongfully convicted of killing Crystal LaPointer in front of a 10-year-old me. That kind of blew my mind, you know, and I was like, well, wow, that changes everything. And I thought, well, if they were to come with two me, that's the role I would want. Everyone was saying Jay Garrick, and that would have been the obvious choice. But when I heard about the father, and he's in prison, and Barry believes and has believed ever since he was 10, and even his best friend Joe doesn't believe, I thought that's the conflicted part. And I said, you know, and everybody, people would not go to conventions and it was finally revealed who I would play. They said, yeah, but we don't want to see you pass the torch. And I said to everybody, you will get that. I said, just, I promise you, you will get that. It will be in the context of a father-son blessing, but you will get the passing of the torch. And I've had so many people write me and say, you know, you were right. And I think the producers were smart, because when I walk onto the set as Henry Allen, I bring having been Barry with me. So that when Grant and I are having scenes, you know, it's not only Henry and Barry, it's John and Grant. You know, I told him we were shooting these season finale. I said, you know, when I get to the line was written, I'm in awe of the young man that you have become. I changed it to, I am in awe of the young man you are becoming. And I told him, I said, you know, Grant, I don't have to act when I say that. He said, I know. He said, I feel that. And that's why we were doing it. They had a reflection in through the prison glass. He couldn't quite see me as well. He could see a reflection. And he stopped. He said, I can't see John. He said, that's why it's so important for me to see you when we're doing these scenes, you know. So it's a real special relationship. It's a special show. I knew that when we did San Diego Comic-Con last year, 180,000 people took over the town, and we premiered our pilot in Hall H in front of 7,000 people. We were oversold. I knew then that, you know, they're doing Constantine, they're doing Gotham, they have Arrow, they're doing Flash, okay? So they're throwing a lot of shows up against the wall at which ones are going to stick. And I knew that what differentiated us was that we were the optimistic one, or the hopeful one, or the slightly goofy one. You know, and I didn't know if in the age of zombie apocalypse and Game of Thrones, you know, if we would stick. But the day that we debuted, one of our reviews said how refreshing it is to have a superhero, one of whose powers is optimism. And I thought, it's going to be us. You know? Yes, sir.
Joe, I got a question. My friend Jeff Grimes and I spent a lot of time talking about The Flash, and one of the things that we all are so endearing to you and so appreciative is that you know the mythos, you enjoy the mythos, you embrace it, and we just really want to thank you for that piece over the last 15, 20 years. Secondly, in Jeff being a huge Silver Age fan, so Barry Allen's important to us.
Yeah.
And we didn't disapprove of the Wally West era, if you will.
Right.
So, I want to ask you, a few years back, we were really fortunate to have us comic book fans, Ethan Van Sciver here. So, Ethan and Jeff Johns collaborated to do Flash, help me out.
Rebirth.
And are you familiar with that piece of work? Certainly his iconic cover where he's putting the boots on?
I wasn't really familiar with it until they came to me.
That was my next question.
Yeah, when they came to me with, when they started talking about the new show, right. And a friend of mine who works as a producer at HBO said, well, you know what Jeff Johns has done? I said, no, I don't really know. And they started telling me about the Allen family and all that. And then I started investigating the cover art and all that stuff and the new sharper tone, you know, he's given it. That's when I found out about it. People always say, were you a comic book fan growing up? And I wasn't. When they said to me, we want you to look at this script about playing the Flash, I said, you mean Flash Gordon? You know, I get highly insulted now when anyone says that to me. I'm like, no, not that. But, you know, and they say, well, did you go back and research? And I said, you know, Danny Bilson and Paul DeMeo, who I will see in L.A. this weekend because they're doing a 25th anniversary tribute at a movie theater in Los Angeles. Mark Hamill will be there. I'll be there. The producers of the new show will be there. The old show, the guy who built the original suit will be there. We'll do a panel. We'll show the two original Trickster episodes. What was the question? I totally got lost.
You just went from... The rebirth of Barry. It was all about the rebirth of Barry, and when they came to you discussing, you know, here's where we've been, here's where we're going, and you just took it from there.
Gone.
That's all.
Gone.
We got this. We're following.
All right. Yes.
Whenever you were playing the Flash yourself, what did you do as far as
that? That reminds me of where I was. Thank you. Is that Danny Bilson and Paul DeMeo did such a good job with the original Flash pilot story, because I had no interest in coming in and playing, you know, Hugh Hollywood hero. But when I found out that Barry, in our telling in 1990, was the unblessed son of a cop family, his brother was the favorite son, but even so, they had a really close relationship. He ends up being killed by a motorcycle gang. When Barry gets his powers, the first thing he wants is to be rid of them. He doesn't trust it, but then when his brother's killed, he wants to avenge the death of his brother. I was like, okay, I can wrap my actor's soul around that. You know, so I took everything that I needed, really, from their script and their knowledge. And the great thing, I was talking last night, we were talking, and I said, the great thing about this show now is Andrew Kreisberg, Jeff Johns, David Nutter, and Greg Berlanti were all big fans of the 1990 version. The Flash is their favorite character. They're not producing mass entertainment for you guys to consume. They are writing a show that they want to see.
Yeah.
And if we all enjoy it, that's fine with them. No, but I think you feel that, don't you? I mean, they come to you with an idea. When they got Mark Hamill to come back, I get this call from Andrew Kreisberg. Man, we got a surprise for you. It's so cool, you know. So that's the way it is. That's the way the workplace is.
It's really special. So awesome.
Now, what was your question?
So, what did you do as far as prepping yourself physically and getting in shape for the role and getting, you know, superhero shape and everything as far as working out all the damn time in the gym four times a week?
I think, well, early in my career, we mentioned Guiding Light. 1980, I ran around in a Speedo and sang You Needed Me for a couple of years. That's Kelly Nelson. So I was working out, like, from the very beginning. In those days, I'm not going to tell that story. But they told me, Bobby Anton, our designer, they were talking about the looks of different characters. They said,
And this was 1980, mind you, so it was years ago. But they said, well, if John Wesley is not so much a question of how to dress him as how to undress him. So that kind of, my problem when I got to the show, was keeping weight on. It was the same problem Barry in the story was having, because that suit was brutal. I'd be in it for 30. I'm not whining. You know, nobody wants to hear anybody who's been privileged to play a superhero get up and whine about how hard it was. Oh, the suit was so, you know, these are just the facts. I'd be in it for 30 minutes. I'd pull the gloves off and they would pour the sweat out. It was just hot. They had to glue it. They couldn't clean them. They'd spray them with Lysol. Two for me, two for the stuntman, hang them in my trailer. It'd still be wet at 5 in the morning when I put them back on, broke out all over. So there are issues that are, there's a, like a fraternity, a sorority, because it's men and women, you know, who have been, and we share, you know, what it's like to work in a suit. But then I've lost your question now. Jeez. Coffee, did I answer your question?
Yeah, it was basically just as far as like, how did you
work out? It's before they had a gym. They've now since built a gym on the back lot of Warner Brothers. We shot the original Flash in Los Angeles. We had a third of the back lot at Warner Brothers, and we were in different locations according to the kinds of buildings that they wanted. But they built on one of the sound stages a weight room for me. Of course, it's very hard when you're being glued in, they're taking it off with acetone, they're putting makeup, like you're being, you know. But I would, any time, any chance I got, I'd go in and I'd lift. That was the challenge, because I'd be there 55 to 80 hours a week. We'd start off 7 in the morning on Monday, we'd shoot till 10. We'd come in at 10 on Tuesday and shoot till 2. We'd come in at 2 the next day and shoot till 5. We were tenning in the back lot at Warner Brothers to shoot day for night. And we'd be leaving as the executives were coming to work, and they'd go, "Man, you guys are crazy," you know. But that's what it took in those days to get the show.
It's exhausting anyway, so the last thing you want to do is pump iron.
Just go pump iron. You kind of have to. You know, it's a little bit better now with the modern aesthetic. I always argue, at the beginning, you'll see the pictures at my table, which you can come by and look at. It's free. People will go by and come talk to me. It's fine. As you can see, I talk. but now, what was I talking about? Working out. Yeah, next question. Yes, sir.
I was wondering I was curious if we were going to be able to look forward to your Henry Allen's interactions with the Star Labs team, in particular Cisco.
Have you seen the Trickster episode?
Yes, I have, but yeah. I didn't know if there was any more coming up.
Yeah, I think there will be. You know, of course, we all know Henry dies in the comics.
Yeah, yeah.
He gets killed in prison, so that's always an option if I get too difficult.
What? Henry chokes on a ham sandwich? What?
Don't get difficult.
Those things didn't happen. But, you know, I enjoyed being in Star Labs. That was a relief for me. We got to see Henry not in like crisis mode, you know.
Right.
And I thought it was so, you know, when I met Danielle, who plays Caitlin, when I met her, I had come to do the pilot, we were all up in Vancouver, she came up to me and she said, "Can I have a hug?" So the writers saw that and they wrote it into the script. Wow. That's where that came from. I said, "Absolutely, I will always accept a hug from, you know." So that's, our producers were smart, you know.
Just like any kind of interactions with Henry and the rest of the cast, I think is really beneficial to the overall camaraderie of the whole thing.
Yeah, I like that too. The only thing I know is Andrew said to me, and it's always changing, but he said it doesn't make much sense to spend the first season getting Henry out of prison or to have him disappear.
Right.
And he said there's so many more things we can do with Henry once he's out of prison.
Right.
I was thinking, he's got three dads. I don't mind ignoring the side of the room. He's got three dads, Joe and Henry and Harrison. Of course, Harrison's kind of gone off the deep end, but he's no longer a candidate. I was thinking, who's the expendable one of those three? They can't keep three dads. And I was thinking, Henry's a heart surgeon. You know, Joseph Koch is in the center of the storyline. Harrison's Star Labs, so he's in the center of the storyline. But they say they got plans, so, you know, we'll see what they are.
Yes, sir.
How is it, as far as the success of the Flash going now with social media, where you did not have that at your disposal back in the 90s?
Yeah, it was a different world back 25 years ago, because we started shooting in June of 1990, and we aired in the fall of 1990, as you know. And it was a new way of telling comic book stories on TV. And so we were sort of starting something. I was hesitant to do a costume character on TV because I was delusional enough to fancy myself a serious actor. I wasn't sure that that would lend itself to it, but so we weren't coming into a ready-made audience. We were coming, and we had a strong following. But I talk about the difference in the two different San Diego Comic-Cons. In 1990, I went to San Diego, walked through it in 4 hours, signed a half a dozen autographs, and went back to the set. This last year, we premiered our pilot in Hall H in front of 7,000 people. 180,000 people moved in and took over the city of San Diego. It was insane. Jesse Martin, not experienced the comic book phenomenon before, he said, we haven't even been on the air yet, and we're getting all this love. So it was great. What I hoped for Grant, because we had the critical success, and we were a hit within the industry. But what I hoped for Grant was that he would have, with the role, the popular success that we just missed. And I'm so happy to see that it's a bit easier. He's walking into an audience that's already primed, for the character. And you can see it in the difference. Sometimes when I watch the original, I can see my own discomfort, sort of, particularly I have to speak in the suit. Not Grant, Grant's hopping up and down on things, he's running around, he's going to act in the suit, it's just different. He's also 10 years younger than I am. But it's a big difference. It's a big difference doing a superhero show now, when it's exploded mainstream, than it was then.
Do you think it would have been different back then with The Flash if it had not been as dark and had more optimism like this one?
I don't know, because I think if we had done as optimistic a show as we're doing now 10 years ago, I don't think the audience would have been ready for it. I think the audience now, we've had a real romance with everything having to be dark, everything having to be edgy. And it's still interesting. I mean, Arrow's a terrific show. It's the darker show. I watch it, But I think people are ready, just as a society, we're ready for a little optimism. We're ready for a little relief, I'm not sure that us going... I think if we had gone any lighter in tone, we would have been compared to the 60s Batman version. I think we had to go in the opposite direction, and go dark and gritty. At that time. Yeah.
Yes, sir. Would you speak to the difference between the two Henrys and how we see the relationship with Barry? I mean, the two shows are so radically different.
I make walls.
Well, what's the matter, Barry?
Emmett's a legend. Listen, I had to work. Let me just tell you one thing. I'm giving Grant a lot easier time than Emmett gave me. I'm on the set, the one where Barry gets shot and he's healing really fast. I'm getting into the part we're about to do. He's like, "What are you looking at?" I'm like, "What? I'm just preparing for the scene." Emmett was really rough, but I'll tell you when it changed is that scene in the cemetery when finally I've got these powers and I've decided to take them on to avenge my brother's death. And he says, "Barry, don't fire the gun unless you got a bullet in the chamber." And here's this unblessed son, the geek son of a real Cops Worth the Streets family, who can do things even surpass anything his brother could do. And he knows his dad would be super impressed if he could tell him, and he can't tell him. And all he can say is, "I have the bullet." And from then on, my relationship with Emmett changed. It was... suddenly we were on equal footing. I had earned, and the man's a legend, he was then, and I had to earn his respect, Of course, the two Henrys are totally, totally different. He was much broader in his characterization, in the relationship between Henry and Barry quite often is we just try to meet as two people. And often we're just meeting as John and Grant. There's really no separation between the characters that we're playing. You know, he and I will be talking to each other, and, you know, they'll say, okay, get in your place, and we're doing the scene. We'll continue our conversation, you know, we'll sit down. You know, whereas there, and Grant and I are still talking about this one moment, and then they'll call action, we'll go right into the scene. There's no separation between how we relate as colleagues and friends and as our characters. And I think it reads well for that reason. I hope it does. I feel that it does. It's a joy to act in. Yes, Kenny.
First off, let me say what a pleasure it is to have you here, of course.
Thank you.
And going back to the relationship you have with Grant, do you have that same relationship like when they brought back Tina McGee and others from your time on the show that you did? Is it still like it was for you, you know, like when you were acting with the, I forgot her name, but the actress who played
Amanda, Tina, yeah, Amanda Faze.
Do you still have that with her when she's totally on the set now?
Totally, absolutely. I hope we get scenes together. No, I saw Amanda and I had appeared at we were in Dallas together in 2011. We were at Chiller together, I think, was it 2011, 2012, 2013, right around then, with her husband, Corbin, who I just did a movie with called Sensory Perception, which I think you guys are going to dig. Corbin Burns and John Savage, me. Anyway, that's another story. But, you know, I heard, you know, that great accent, you know, I come out of my trailer here, John! You know, and I know there's Amanda standing down there, and she looks great, you know, and it's like a reunion. It's a little mind-blowing, you know. None of us quite knew what to expect, but since all our producers were fans of the show, you know how they prepared me for the end, the pilot scene, which was very emotional between us? They pulled a trick on me. David Nutter, great director, he comes up, you know, and he's speaking in hushed tones, and he's water and says, okay, now, we've written some lines that we have not wanted you to hear or read until now. So don't come in on your cue. Don't come in until you hear the words, whatever, I love you, Dad, I love you, Barry. And so what that did is a brilliant maneuver. I had to really listen because I didn't know what he was going to say. So the first time I heard those words, you remember when you wanted me to change my name because you didn't want anybody to associate me with you? Well, I'm glad I didn't change my name. First time I heard those words was in front of the camera. You know, it makes me emotional now, you know. And so they knew what they were doing, you know, and it's just been that way for me and Grant ever since. You know, I'm proud of you and I'm proud to be your son. And then we went into, I love you, son, I love you, dad.
It's really emotional because, you know, you can feel it from your two characters interacting that way.
I'm so glad I like him. You know what I mean? I mean, I felt if I didn't respect him as much as I do as an actor, if I didn't like, you know, Jesse Martin said it best. He said, this show is going to work for one reason. He said, because that kid's head and his heart are in alignment and they're in the right place. And I couldn't say it any better.
My second question is, we've never seen any, of course, plugging around, but were there any bloopers or outtakes from your time in the 90s and now, where is it all just?
Oh, I'm sure there were things that didn't happen, things, you know, you come running up into a scene and go, what was I supposed to say? You know, what's your name again? You know, all those little things, but I can't think of anything specifically. But blooper reels are always fun. You're always afraid that they're going to save them, you know, and invariably they do. Yes, sir.
I noticed when you were in the costume, obviously it's a very physical role, there was a couple times if you look really close, you could see there's like a little bantu suit with the arm pins. How many costumes did you have? Did you have somebody that had you to patch in the same costume, or what did you have in terms of wardrobe for the times when you moved the wrong way and accidentally had a tear in the suit?
Mark Hamill just gave an interview in which he referred to the suit as, I wish I could, a faux rubber, red foam rubber sponge nightmare.
It looked like it was velour or something on the outside.
It was very, they spent $100,000 in 1990 to build four suits. And what they, the way they did it was very weird process. Well, first of all, they took a body cast of me. Then they sculpted individual foam latex muscles. It wasn't a one-piece suit. They were all, the effects were individual. Check it out. They were all individually sculpted. And then they brought me in, and they greased me down, and they wrapped me in cellophane, and then they put a spandex suit over that. And I soon found out why they did that, because the glue they used to set the muscle pieces got hot when it was setting. So it was burning while it was setting. Then, so all the white pieces got glued on. They let that dry. Then they flocked it with a red material. And that was all great, except I would have it on for 20, 30 minutes, and I would start sweating through the muscles. You would say, which I thought was kind of cool, but they said, hey, that's not in the comic books. So they had a solution, though. They sprayed it with a sealant. So it just all stayed inside, you know, like drowning.
Oh. Oh. Wow. And so it's not really good.
They couldn't clean them. So they hung, there were two for me, two for the stuntmen. They hang my two in my trailer and spray them with Lysol. And they'd still be wet at 5 in the morning when I put them on. You know, and this thing with the seams was, they didn't want to go the route with like the Batman costume. You know, this guy's thing was speed. It couldn't be hard. It had to be movable. It had to move. You know, they've gone even further with that now in trimming down the suit and making it more streamlined, which I think is smart because the guy, he has to be aerodynamic. I kept saying cut down the traps. In fact, we cut the suit down over the course of the series. But anyway, with me sweating through it that much, immediately the foam latex started crumbling. So there was constant maintenance. It had to be shot very carefully. I had a very strict rule. I didn't want any B-roll when I was in the suit. In fact, I had a real argument with Entertainment Tonight once because they tried to sneak in some B-roll. You know what B-roll is? Everybody knows what B-roll is, right? It's when a camera crew comes in and it's not production camera, which is very controlled lighting and very controlled shots. But somebody comes in like with, she's doing B-roll right now. Sue is doing B-roll. And just comes in and shoots off to the side. Because there were, it was a constant battle to keep those suits from disintegrating. People said, where, the last I heard, half of one was in a plexiglass case in Planet Hollywood in Orlando, which made me sick to my stomach. Even close to that people's food, you know. Concealed. Yes, sir.
Do you think it's a sign of where we came from 25 years ago and how the heroes were stylized to have the bigger muscles? And now it's more, you know, being a Flash or Arrow. You know, it's they're both that more realistic look.
Absolutely. We were in the post Mark McGuire, Jose Canseco, post Pumping Iron hangover. You know, all heroes had to be, you know, twice as big as life, you know. And now it's people are, you know, we see baseball players shrink to their normal size. We're used to seeing that. I think it makes a lot of sense. I like that they went with that leather look to the costume. His costume is in three pieces, too. They keep changing it. They brightened up the red. He now has more muscle shoulders under it. But I like the fact that it's streamlined. Colleen Atwood, Oscar winner designer, intentionally designed a suit that would look more urban. They had a younger audience in mind and would be more aerodynamic. And plus, he can move. He's a dancer. You know, he did Glee. Everybody knows that. You know, he's incredibly well-trained physically. He can leap, he can jump, he can do things in the suit that I could never do in or out of the suit. So it's good to be given him a suit that he can do that stuff in. Yeah.
With like my age group, we're not the same age as Grant. We grew up, the first real superhero TV show we got to watch was Smallville. And they had, for a little bit, they had the Bart Allen character in there. Do you think there's any chance, like we were talking earlier about the Flash family, that the show might expand and actually, because Bart is Henry's grandson from the, or no, Barry's grandson from the future, who runs back in time, to me is...
They are already talking about all that. Listen,
that's awesome.
Think of the amount of story
Oh, there's
that we have burned through in 18 episodes. I mean, I remember Andrew saying to me, he said, because they had an order for 13. I'm reading these scripts, I'm saying, man, this one's lining out, this one's joining. He says, we may only get 13 episodes, but they're going to be the best episodes. So yeah, they're talking about all that stuff. You know, you guys know about Legends. You know, the Firestorm. Sue, help me out. What's the name?
Victor Garber.
Victor Garber is going to be on it. Wentworth Miller, Captain Cold, you know, they're going to do 13 episodes of that. They've got Supergirl spinning off. The Atom is going to be on it, and all these universes are going to be overlapping. It's intense, man. It's intense. Yes, sir.
I'd just like to say first, I'm a huge fan of you. I mean, I may have not watched all the Flash episodes from your time. I wasn't born yet, but I'm trying to watch. I'm trying to watch as much as I can, but my question is, if you were still playing as the Flash, which of the villains you faced during that time would have to be your favorite to face?
Well, it wouldn't be the Mirror Master, because I hated having garbage bags full of snakes put on it. That was the weirdest thing. Danny Wilson was directing that episode, and he is deathly afraid of snakes. So here they come with the Mirror Master trick. Snakes! You know, and they come in the garbage bag, and the guy, you know, had those nutty professor glasses and spiked hair, and they're putting these snakes on me. At one point, a snake crawls over my head, gets in between the glasses, and I see the tongue come out, starts putting the glasses. Danny about passes out. He has to leave the set, you know. It's like the poor makeup lady, she screamed. And I'm like, guys, help me out here. You know, so we got that. But which of the villains? Well, obviously, Mark and I had kept in contact. I just like Mark so much as a person. I look forward to seeing him this weekend, you know, with the 25th anniversary tribute in L.A. And that it's fun. I didn't necessarily enjoy filming because I don't know if you saw the Trial of the Trickster, which was our last episode of the original show, but they had me face down in bubblegum, they had me chewed up electric shocks, they tied me from the ankles in one of the Trickster episodes and dipped me down into a fancy glass tank of water and then blew up the tank. I'm like, did I piss off the writers? what's up with this? At one point he says, hey buddy, right Palomino, right, bam, right back down into the pink goo. So I will say one thing, and I don't know why this is popping into my head, but I thought a lot about Deadly Nightshade. He wasn't a villain, but I thought a lot about Jason Bernard recently, and what a fine actor he was, and I enjoyed that. Probably one reason I enjoy playing Barry's father now, that mentoring relationship. I respond very well to that. I've responded very well when Deadly Nightshade was mentoring Barry. But the villains they have now, I mean, my God, their heads burst into fire, and they go shooting up into the sky. You know? It's like, you know. The bees, they had the things that I saw Andrew Kreisberg at the Upfronts party after it was announced that we would be going for a season. I went in, he said, I bet you're surprised what we can do. And they're doing it in 8 days, and it took us 9 with 2 units shooting simultaneously. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, I think, when I was watching the Trial of the Trickster, I think probably when you were face down the logo, I think that had to be a bad experience, like a bad thing for you.
That wasn't a particularly fun experience. Plus, you know, being a little bit uncomfortable in the suit, it was really challenging for me. Like when the Flash is coming down with the bright and colored Trickster boots on and smashing the parking meters, and you know, I did enjoy the line. It's not guns that kill people, it's these little hard things. You know, throwing the bullet back. I did enjoy that. But yeah, those were challenging episodes for me. Yes, sir. There's it in the back, the guy in the back.
Do you feel that Grant got shafted by not getting picked to do the Justice League movies?
Yeah. You know, I thought Steven showed a great amount of leadership. He is a good leader. He was amazing at Comic-Con. He hosted the festivities of all 4 shows. We did the panels. really good guy, and I thought he really spoke out, you know, when I don't really have an opinion about that. Who was I talking about? We were talking about that at the table. I think that's a bit of an old idea that the TV world and the movie worlds are separate and they don't intersect, you know. Warner Brothers and the CW, you know, they all seem to really know now, be very rooted in what they're doing. So I'm not going to second guess them. I think Grant's fine with it. You know, people start going, they say, oh, you'll be running for 10 seasons. You know, Grant just sort of freezes. About the third episode, I came on set and I said, so, is it getting real yet? He's like, oh my God. He says, I wake up at 5 in the morning going, what have I done? I said, you'll get used to that.
Guys, we have time for one more. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Oh. Okay.
Just as a follow up to his question, I do understand that some of the difficulties they have of comparing or connecting TV shows with movies, because I also follow Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. when they connect in their Marvel movies. But for that same reason...
Yeah, they're doing it.
For that same reason that DC is keeping the disconnect, why can't they keep the disconnect with the characters too and allow other characters to be in the series? Like with Arrow, they're not allowing certain characters to be part of the Suicide Squad, and they've done remove Deadshot now because they're doing Suicide Squad movie. I just wondered if, I don't know, but
Marvel, think about it this way. Marvel got the jump on everybody by doing it overlapping universes in the movies. Now they're getting the jump, because let's face it, the media platforms now are wide open.
Yeah.
HBO now, you don't even have to have cable. You can just order it right off the internet. You know, everything, it's not this big line of demarcation between television and film anymore. So I almost think, again, I don't want to second guess my bosses, but I almost think it's reacting to an old idea. And I think maybe Marvel is one step ahead again by realizing that it all goes together. It's all entertainment.
Yeah.
You know? Is there a kid, is there a young person in the room who has a question before I go?
No.
Is there someone? Yes.
Well, obviously the Arrow and the Flash shows intertwine a lot. And do you get to,
Get intertwined with it?
Well, not necessarily that, but as a person, do you get to meet, like, Stephen Amell and all those other...
Sure. Yeah, we all shoot on the same lot in Vancouver. We never see him. They're at one end of the lot, we're at the other. But we intersect at, like, Comic-Cons and stuff like that. And it's I want to say one more thing about the Flash cast, and I think what makes our show special. When we were all Constantine, Gotham, Arrow, Flash, we were all beginning our season and kicking it off at San Diego Comic-Con. Before we premiered our pilot in Hall H, they catered this huge green room, this great buffet lunch, you know. And all the actors were there. We were all there with our representation, our publicists, our manager. And everybody got their food, and we looked around the room. Somebody called this to my attention. And the actors would split up and go with their people. The Flash cast all went to the same table. And that's what makes it a really unique experience. And I think you feel that. You know, I mean, my God, we're doing a scene. I look over there. There's Jesse Martin and Grant. Jesse is showing Grant a new tap routine. You know, I mean, it's a cast that really enjoys being together, and I think that reads on the screen. It certainly makes it a better workplace. Thanks. Yes, sir.
Do you think Kate will ever help you across the show?
Oh, I think so.
Well, what a great... Guys, I want to thank... We're going to save that for sure. I want to thank you guys for just showing, you know, John, such a great, great, great time. You know, John, thank you. Now, John, man, listen. We've been here for 10 years, and we keep trying in the community rallies, and we keep trying to put on the best show we can. And thank you for raising the bar.
Thank you.
To the
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.
Hi, this is John Wesley Shipp, reminding you to keep listening to Nerds United and all the great shows on Jittery Monkey Podcast Network.